You may paint and you may die. Run and you'll live, at least for a while. And painting your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies, our minis, that they may take our lives, but they will never take our freedom!
Trapped in a plastic. Is the podcast where you don't have to slap people in the face just because they are unpleasant to look at.
Yeah, in the podcast where the presenters yell and clip the audio at you right in the beginning.
Yeah, so it will forever be much quieter after this. it's all been like leveled by that peak.
Yeah. That's true. I didn't think about that. That was a very terrible.
I don't
William
think that
Wallace
was Scottish.
Quote.
No.
No.
I mean, it was a little.
Was that pirate?
There was a little bit of like, if Captain Jack Sparrow had sex with the Lucky Charms dude.
Okay.
That was the baby they had.
You want to try?
No.
I was trying to make it about painting on the fly and just failing miserably.
I it worked for me.
Thank you.
I made those connections.
Thank you.
I wonder how long I can hold this sword here.
I dare you to do it for the entire episode.
No, I'm not gonna do it.
I'll pay for your lunch if you do.
It will make this whole process so miserable.
But
I think
free lunch.
I mean, it's like $10 in attendees, dude. I can.
That's the thing. When you really sit down and think about free lunch, it really isn't that much of a deal. You
I know.
Know.
It's all about
what you got to do for it.
It's all where you're at in life. Like if I was in college, fuck yeah, I'd do that. I mean, no
I'll
problem.
Just fucking serve for 3 hours, whatever,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, I'll do it while you feed me my lunch. I have to. That's gonna be part of it. All right, so we do a podcast here. You may not have recognized that because we're not really talking about anything important to the world. What are we talking about, Scott?
Today is a special episode where John and I are talking about what excites us in the hobby. And so we're trying to figure out last night, as we typically do, the night before the episode, what we're going to talk about in the podcast. We're trying to think of some topics and, you know, having some more deep ideas and discussion topics. And John was like, do you want to talk about things that excite you? And I was like, bruh. That's all I ever want to talk about, like literally, bro. So I was like, sure, yeah, we can do that as a topic. So that's our main topic for today. But for now, we're going to get into what we no, the preamble ramble. I almost skipped it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's preamble. And then we'll get into what we painted, and then we'll get into that main topic.
All right, the sword. That's down.
All right.
No free lunch for John. Cut my fucking femoral artery. I don't think that's the word. But.
Oh, the one that makes you bleed out in the thigh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen some movies.
Yeah. It's usually like you stab.
What are you fucking doing?
You, I'm just trying to get comfortable.
You put it down on the ground, just like flat.
No, I just like it right.
Oh, you want it to be there. Okay.
I want it to be there. Usually, it's what the teenager stabs the killer with like some kind of a pocket knife or something.
Yeah, a little punch dagger.
Yeah, something, and then he or she like. They're always like on the ground, and they like crawl away quick, and they get up and run.
Yeah.
But it never actually kills the killer.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, he's unkillable.
Yeah, he's unkillable.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if it's a guy, just a dude.
Yeah,
he's still unkillable.
It's a force. Yeah, really.
Yeah, his name is Jerry, and he just like pulls people's heads off. But like apparently he can take 3 bullets and 2 kitchen knives to the thigh, and he's fine.
I mean, Freddy Krueger exists in your fucking dreams, so I don't think you can kill him with the fucking razor blade.
No, that's true. That's true.
But the other guys, I don't know their story.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but all my dreams, like the most reoccurring, like scary dream I have is where I'm like walking. I don't know if I'm walking downstairs or walking somewhere, and then just like the step isn't there,
oh,
and then you fall.
Yeah,
right. Like
the feeling of falling while you're dreaming is like yeah, it feels real.
Yeah, it feels real. Like what would it be like if you like. That dream happens, and you're like, whoop, you fall, and then you're like, as you're like falling, then like Freddy Krueger pops up.
Yeah,
I was just like, I just wake up and just shit my pants.
That'd be not okay. I actually fell out of a bunk bed while dreaming something like that.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. When I was really little, I fell, like, and I hit a carpeted floor, so like it wasn't a huge deal, but like, it could have been. But it was scary to wake up and be actually falling, but like lasts for like a third of a second. And then you're hitting.
Like, oh shit, it was real.
Yeah.
Was the dream about falling? Do you remember that?
No, but like I've had that same like gut lifting sensation of falling. But I don't think it was about it. No.
Yeah. How messed up is our brain that it can give your body in your dream the full reaction that your body would have if that physical action would take place?
It's weird.
It's fucking weird.
Dreams in general are weird.
Yeah, dreams are weird. This podcast episode is now all about dreams.
The preamble ramble has nothing in it that says anything about dreams.
No, that's not written down anywhere.
Yeah.
You played your first game.
I did not play my first game.
Spider Porn.
I won my first game of Spider Porn.
Okay.
I've played 8 games of Shatterpoint, and I've lost them all.
That's got to be the worst kind of porn.
Shatterpoint porn or Spider Porn?
Spider Porn.
Oh, absolutely. Well, there are some like kind of like cute ones that like jump a lot, and they kind of like little puppies.
Oh yeah, those little jumping spiders.
Like black glossy eyes, and they kind of cute.
Yeah. What's that guy? What's that that cartoon that the dude on YouTube made that he worked for? He worked for DreamWorks or something. Mm. He's a little spider.
Mm.
He's a little jumpy spider. You know what I'm talking about?
I think so. Yeah. I didn't know it was a YouTube thing. I thought it might have been like a cartoon that they drew or something like that.
Yeah, it's a YouTube channel. His name is like Terrence the Spider or something.
Oh, okay, I know that. Yeah.
And he's got
Terrence.
He like uses his nephew voices the spider.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's his nephew, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's just a little kid. He's just like a kid's like 5 years old and like, "Oh, hey, you want to play with me?" A boo-boo on a nose.
Wait, what? With the spider?
Yeah, because it's like real-world footage, but then the spider is animated. And then he's like, he's got one episode where it's like his golden retriever.
Okay.
And then he's like, "I'm a boop him on a nose." His name isn't Terrence, but it's something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Kind of reminds me of Marcel the Shell a little bit.
Marcel the Shell. This preamble round couldn't be going better.
Yeah, okay. Anyways, I won my first game of Shatterpoint.
Yeah.
It felt good. I'm loving that game. I've been tracking all the games that I've been playing in 2024 with Board Game Geek because you can log plays of games. So I played Shatterpoint 3 times this year so far, and I'm playing again today and again tomorrow. And the reason why I'm playing so often is actually related to your preamble ramble topic. So I'll turn it over to you.
Oh, okay. What is mine? Oh, yes.
It's about taking a little break.
It's taking a break, but there's a pretty strong asterisk there.
Well, it's not really taking a break. Yeah.
No. So, it kind of is. Per my usual video release schedule, I had a video, as of the recording today, I had a video that went live today, painting this big dude, Doofer. And then next week, I'd have another video out. But to really get myself to stay on track, I guess, because I don't feel behind in my Golden Demon painting, but to really finish strong and give myself enough of breathing room, I'm taking the entire week to just paint for like 10 hours a day or more. I paint in the evenings for my Golden Demon project.
Are you going to film it?
No. Nope. I'm to a point where I am the part that I'm working on right now, which is the High Marshal's horse. And this thing has been my fucking doom. Because this horse has got so much shit on it. Painting the horse itself was so fun. That's the first thing I did. Because, you know, you usually want to paint inside to out, right? So you can't get further in unless it's a skeleton. Then there's, like, the horse hide and everything. And that was so fun. But it has blankets. It's got leather straps. It's got buckles. It's got chainmail. It's got cloth. It's got a sleeping bag. It's got weapons. It's got holsters. It's got a giant flag. It's got a banner. It's got NMM armor. It's got so much stuff on this fucking horse.
And it's big.
And it's big. And I'm like, I underestimated how long this was going to take to paint. And one thing that, like, I came to this realization about things that I don't like to paint as much doesn't necessarily have to do with the size of the model, but the amount of individual little details. And it's not even that you have to, like, go get more colors out. Like, that's a part of it. It takes longer. It's like, okay, this thing's green. Now I got to figure out what's my base coat for green, my shadow one, my shadow two, my layer up, my highlight, my whatever. Yes, that takes time. But it's more that each one of those things is, like, means that you're not completing one big section and you feel like you've done 70% of the work, where you can get the momentum of, like, well, as long as I'm doing this part of the highlight for all of the flesh, if the monster is mostly flesh, it feels like by the time I get that done, I've completed a lot more. And the thought process of, like, well, I can't have too many dark things next to dark things. And what kind of accent colors do I want to choose? And I don't want to have a clown fiesta, so I can't pick too many different colors. But I don't want them all samey-same. It's just like, fuck this fucking horse. So my goal is to finish the horse next week, which I'm in the home stretch. I probably have about maybe 30% left. I just have the straps, the NMM, and the banner. So I'm going to probably do some kind of a little freehand on the banner too. So there's that, and then I have the final figure, which he's mostly pure plate mail armor, which is full NMM, so that's not going to be easy, but he's mostly one material. So that's my plan, and it's stressing me the fuck out because I've never, since I started my YouTube channel, I've never not stayed on my regular schedule.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. You'll be fine. I think, like we were talking about before we started recording, like I think it is a healthy experience for me to see the world will not end. Mm-hmm. But then for my next video, maybe I'll be all set up for whether I want to do one on painting the base and pulling it all together for a video prior to Golden Demon. I will be set up for that. Or
So you are going to film some stuff?
Not this week. I'm not going to film painting the horse, and I'm not going to film painting the final dude. I'm going to plan on painting the base and kind of like showing it all come together at
why,
the end.
Why? I don't know if you really explained why exactly you aren't going to film, because like you are doing a bunch of stuff you're unsure of. You don't want to be weighed down by it. What's the reason?
Well, I found that like if I want to be in the zone and focus my brain on the attention to detail and all the decision making, I am pulling myself out of that when I'm focusing on, am I in focus? What shots do I want to capture? What all these other things that I'm not just focusing on painting my best and nothing else. And so I'm like, if the goal of this is to win a Golden Demon, this is kind of a video series I've done, and there's going to be more on it, you know, by the time it's all completed. But like, I need to have big chunks where I'm just painting the best I can paint. And so that's why I'm doing that. If I'm taking this full week to just paint as best I can, then that's my focus. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's a little bit of added pressure, too, when you're making a video. It's like now I suddenly have a different thing that's kind of siphoning creative energy from me. I'm trying to think of a through line for all this painting, how it's going to make a compelling video and its thumbnail, and like how to keep it interesting and engaging. Or do I need to grab another shot of me painting at the desk? Like that's a wide shot, so I can like break up this long area of painting. It's like suddenly you're asking all these questions that are not, how do I make this model look excellent? Right?
Yeah.
It's just distracting.
That's one of the things that we could do a whole fucking podcast episode on painting your best on camera, or like painting on camera, honestly. And actually, that's not a bad, we put that in the back burner. I think that might be a fun one. But that's one part that people don't think about, and that I never thought about until I actually tried to execute it a number of times, is when you're trying to paint your absolute best and you're doing it on camera, whenever we're painting for a video, at least this is how I am. You tell me if you're different. My brain is thinking all about stuff about the video while I'm painting, in addition to decision-making of the painting. But a fair amount of my mental space is focused on, all right, what's the story here, or how much of this, or what parts of this do I want to show, and what's the most impactful stuff, and like, oh, that'd be cool if the story went to here when I got to this part, or, you know, this part isn't super important to the thing I'm trying to create, so I'm not going to record any of this. So your brain is thinking on all that. I can't think on all that and just be like, how do I paint a sleeping bag?
Yeah, I don't know what the breakdown for me is, like the ratio. But I think I'm pretty good at like when I'm painting an individual part of the model to get really sucked into it, which is actually part of the problem, because I will not notice when like my head is blocking full chunks of footage.
Yeah.
I'm like really just wrapped up in it. Even though there's like a giant 30-inch monitor right next to me where it shows what my camera can see. So I don't know. It's it's hard. I'll get sometimes sucked into it and then kind of forget that I'm making a video a little bit. And then I'll be like, you know what? I haven't used the Rhino Slider in like 3 days. Or I haven't shot like a top down cool thing of my palette and mixing paint in a while, or like just in general thought about what, like, when would it be good to get a close up shot of something, like I'm trying to display something. So it could sometimes be where I forget that I'm really supposed to be making a video, and I'm just filming painting footage like I used to do when I was filming an old video.
Yeah.
Like, this is the only camera I have. Just turn it on, turn it off, and like don't move from the desk. But it does happen sometimes.
I do a lot of, I have my document up for my video while I'm doing the painting too, and I will come up with all sorts of like other B-roll shots, stuff that I can't take right here, but things that I want to show, or interesting things. Or I'll have this list and be like, okay, when I break for lunch and come back, I'm going to move the separate camera over to there so I can get that shot this afternoon while I'm painting. Like, that's all, you know, mental space that you're using for not painting best. So. Yeah, long story short, I don't want to. It's kind of. It's not unlike when we're like, okay, oh, are you
that sword?
Are you are you going to make a video about the convention you're going to? Or like, oh, you don't have a camera, aren't you? Whatever. It's like, so sometimes, you know, I just want to be present in the thing I'm doing.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Yeah. So that's it. That's my big thing, you know. That's been going on, and I felt like I actually had this moment yesterday. I was talking to Blair, who's edits the podcast, and he said something that kind of surprised me. And I'm just like, I mentioned something. I'm just like, I'm kind of overwhelmed right now. Like I feel like my foot has been to the floor on the gas pedal for a month and a half about kind of everything in life. I haven't played a video game in like 6 months. I haven't done hobby stuff for myself. This is not to get any sympathy. It was just like, I have committed to my free time is just like, I just want to paint for Golden Demon and I'm enjoying it. So I'm not feeling like I'm missing out and stuff, but it's like everything is kind of all building up. And I've been a little bit short with people on things, just because I'm feeling overwhelmed and I'm just like, I'm just going to be. And I'm now DMing for our new D&D campaign, and that's kind of felt like I don't have the time to prep and really make it as good as I want to right now. So I feel that's getting me kind of stressed. And Blair's like, yeah, you know, I think we can tell that you're just kind of overwhelmed right now. And I was like, well, I mean, that's good to tell me. Like, not that I'm an asshole. I mean, maybe I am. But just like, yeah, I just kind of feel it. I'm like, you know, I'm like, it's all going to change when we get into Sexy Teeth Joshy's vehicle and leave for Adepticon. Because at that point, I will have done what I could do. I will be able to completely unwind and just enjoy a convention, enjoy the time with the nerds, and just not have all the stress of everything. And then it's kind of all going to melt. That's my hope anyway.
Yeah. I mean, in a big way, everything you're describing is a version of what I'm about to describe for my last preamble topic. And I think actually we should talk about what excites us in the hobby and what we're painting. For me, I think is very merged. Mm-hmm. I think our topic and what we painted should go together.
Sure.
If you're cool with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything for me is related at the moment.
Yeah.
But you mentioned taking a break from your release schedule with the paint Golden Demon. Right now I am in a break from doing any kind of work. Because a couple of days ago, I just finished the very last thing for my Kickstarter campaign, and I have released it all out into the world, and you can go and pick it up right now at miniac.co, and I want to talk a little bit more about that later on. But that's a...
Well done, dude.
That's a two-year-long project. So the campaign launched on February 22nd, and I really finished like the masterclass courses, which is the last thing, on February 20th. So it was 2 days short of 2 full years. And like Golden Demon and like a lot of things coming like in taking your time and energy away, that thing was like a leech on me for a long time. And I don't say this in admonishment of the opportunity it gave me and the money it gave me and the support it gave me through fans and stuff. Like there's a lot of things to celebrate about Kickstarter, but also it was like a lot of energy siphoned away to make sure it was progressing, make sure that people were doing the things they were promising, make sure that I was keeping on track with my responsibilities. And so the moment that the European fulfillment partner decided to actually start shipping my ship was like, oh, I'm in striking distance. Right.
See it.
So it's like the Adepticon thing, right? It's like, as soon as I get into that car, I can relax. And so for me, I was like, as soon as I do the very last thing for this masterclass course, for the Kickstarter, which was making the YouTube video about it, editing it, rendering it, thumbnailing it, and putting it on my channel, which is all done, I was like, now I'm done. Now I'm fully done. And so I could see that finish line because there was no one in my way other than me. Like, all my partners had finished their responsibilities, and I was like, let's fucking end this. And so I finished editing Kill Your Friends like second week in January. And since then, until now, I have been editing those fucking courses, working on Sundays and Saturdays, like coming here at 5 a.m. to like do like 10-hour days, and they're fucking done. And I'm taking off work right now, and I'm just fucking chilling, watching movies, playing games with my friends. And very surprisingly, I want to paint so much.
Oh, that's so good.
So I'm just painting so much, and I'm putting probably too much effort into Necromunda juveniles that are like, are going to die in the first game. I'm strangely really loving it. And so you can go and buy that stuff nowadays. If you don't know what we're talking about, what I'm talking about, a long time ago, 2 years ago, I ran a Kickstarter campaign that sold 6 different miniatures, 3 different concepts and 2 scales. So they're called they're wood elves. I have the ranger, the warrior, and the witch, and they come in 75 mil and 32 mil. I have a brush box that's made out of metal and it's fancy and sexy, and we have masterclass courses for each of the display models, how the box arts were painted. One's done by me, one's done by John, and the other is done by Ben Cantor, a Golden Demon, a Crystal Brush winning painter. And they're all very different. They're all very different courses, very different teaching styles, and obviously we go over different models. And I put a lot of work into those courses, and I think they came out amazingly. But yeah, check it out, miniac.co. When you buy the model and the course together, it's $15 off. I think that's all the shilling I'll do. Check it out, though. It's all on the site now for actual retail release. When you buy it, you'll get it. If there's no stock quantity, you can't buy it. Like, that's how it works now.
They're all in the other room. When I came in this morning, it's just it's like a fucking Scrooge McDuck's money pit.
Yeah, just like a giant tower of cardboard boxes.
Little miniatures.
Yeah, we're preparing to start selling them. So in the evenings when we're like watching TV shows, me and Amber are folding wood elf boxes just in preparation of, having a couple sales,
Yeah.
I'm not going to presume anything about selling everything, but it's going to be a lot. She's on vacation right now in Florida with her family. So that's the other thing is – Amber is away as well, and so I'm just doing literally whatever I want.
Oh man!
Other than like obviously taking care of my dogs, walking my dogs, and stuff like that.
You gotta walk the dog to make sure, dogs. Make sure they're poo poo, make sure they eat.
But otherwise, I don't gotta walk myself. Oh. I can eat Nutty Buddies for dinner, and I fucking will, dude.
And I will. I saw your fucking Instagram post of your shopping cart. It was fucking Diet Dr. Pepper, Nutty Buddies, and Hot Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Yeah, I was like, let's get messed up, dude. Yeah. I want to regret my eating choices the morning after.
Yeah.
So I'm in a celebratory mood, and it's actually bizarre how much of a different person I feel like right now. I feel so melodramatic saying that, but like even like the weeks leading up to this, I was like starting to do more chores around the house, starting to paint Necromunda stuff at the house more often. And like even like Amber has always kind of like mimicked my emotions a little bit. And even she was like feeling better and feeling better because she's felt the weight of the thing for a long time too. And she's had to do a bunch of responsibilities as well.
Yeah,
she has a lot of things that I ask her to do. She's the main person that dealt with backer kit after the campaign was pledge managed. So she had to ask about a million questions and decipher their fucking hieroglyphics for responses. Let me just complain about Backkit for a brief moment. Like, that is the premier pledge managing software that people use for Kickstarter, which is basically my campaign has ended. I need to now tell the campaign how I spent my money, Okay, $5 goes to this model, $5 goes to that model. Oh, I want an extra add-on. Bing! Let me get that. Okay, let me pay for shipping and VAT. That is their job, okay? It's the one that everyone turns to. It's the most expensive one. It's the nicest one. So many times using that software, there was like a very, what I thought was a basic feature that was like, no, we don't do that. So here's one example. Whoa. Here's one example. It's like Amber charged a bunch of UK people who hadn't gotten their credit cards charged yet because like they hadn't finished filling out their shipping information. And we need to send that list of people to Games Quest so they could like be like, hey, here's the new people like to fulfill their stuff now. And I was like, okay, find a list of people that you charge credit cards with in BackerKit. And they're like, we don't store that information. It's like, I'm not asking for like credit card information. I want like a list of people that I just charged with their shipping info so I can take that shipping info and fucking give it to my fulfillment partner, because like that's the whole point. You're collecting that information so I can give it to other people. I had to go into Stripe, which is a third-party app that's attached to BackerKit, to find who I actually charge so I could inform people to ship their stuff. It's like, why don't you just store that information so that I can fucking send it to someone and we can, like, I don't know. It seemed like a basic feature to me, and they're like, no, we don't do that. And I was like, what do you mean? I know you do it. You're just not showing it me, like, on the website. It's like, of course you keep it.
Oh, no. So isn't that, it great that you're never going to have to deal with that again ever in your whole life?
But yeah, there's like six times while using BackerKit where it's just like, wait, you don't do that? anyways, so it's all fucking done. And I think I'm really going to feel it when I come back and I sit down to make a YouTube video and I have nothing in the horizon other than that one video.
You can just focus on the thing
that
excites you to make a video on.
Yeah. And there's so much that I'm excited about right now, which is why this podcast episode came at a really good time, actually. So unless you don't have any other preamble realm topics, do you want to get into what excites us right now?
Yeah. Speaking of things that get us excited, I'm excited to just be comfortable at home. Like there's nothing better than just chilling in your favorite couch, eating Flamin' Hot Cheetos, and watching The Office for the 10th time. That just feels safe and comfy, doesn't it?
And our sponsor this week, NordVPN, can make you feel at home even when you're out on the go. And you can get 4 months for free when signing up at the link in the video description, nordvpn.com/tub.
And as you probably know, NordVPN is one of the most popular VPNs out there. And the reason why is because it's really easy to use. You can put it on virtually any device, and it's super fast.
One of the main uses of a VPN, or a virtual private network, is to mask your IP address and prevent what you do online from being shared to anyone who might be looking to make a quick buck off your data.
But NordVPN is for more than just security. It can also block malware and other threats, but it'll also let you know there's a leak from a site visit or any other apps that you use.
They also monitor the dark web and notify you if a bad actor has leaked your login information.
NordVPN can offer you more than just safety. It can also offer you comfort. When I'm away, I can change my location to the USA and stream shows available only in that region, meaning that I can switch to watching the far superior USA version of The Office compared to that dumpy UK version, no matter where I am.
A single subscription protects up to 6 individual devices, helping to keep you safe on all major platforms. They're also helping to keep your wallet safe with a 30-day money-back guarantee for all users.
Check out the link down below in the video description or show notes. It's nordvpn.com/tup, and you get 4 months free when you sign up for a 2-year subscription.
Thank you to Nord for sponsoring this episode.
Who would be a bad actor? It would be like Pauly Shore is out there fucking leaking your info.
Yeah, dude.
Sean William Scott.
Man, I'm trying to think of a person I think is a bad actor.
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep! Illegal.
See, if we just name good actors and we lump them with Pauly Shore, that makes Pauly Shore a better actor.
Pauly Shore is a great actor. Have you seen Encino Man? We's in the juice.
All right, Scotty boy, what excites you? Backslash, what have you been painting and how do those roads converge?
I've mentioned in the past, I'm in a narrative Necromunda campaign, and I don't know what it is about the game, but the game has fucking got my jimmies all rustled up, dude.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know. Like, I'm having a lot of fun with the game, kind of outside the game. So I feel like Necromunda, the game, I wouldn't, like, choose to play a skirmish game of Necromunda. Like, I'd only ever play a campaign of it, or with, like, a group that I grew in a campaign against someone else's group that they grew in a campaign to a similar level or something like that. Just because there's so much character in the game. Everything just drips it, and it's, like, it's so much fun to, like, just get in the weeds with every single dude and have a lot of fun modeling him and kitting him out and spending money on him and, like, you know, like, some, like, I don't know, like,
is that like real money or is this like Necromunda bucks?
Oh, it's Necromunda bucks for sure. It's creds, man.
Creds. Oh, cred.
Yeah, they're gangs, dude. I have a hard time explaining what it is, right? Because, like, I criticized Age of Sigmar for having rule sprawl, right? Necromunda definitely has rule sprawl. Like, it has a ton of books, like, that you have to get to kind of figure out what, you know, what is right. And, like, even beyond that, there are, like, millions of community resources that help you house rule the game to make it more enjoyable to play. So it's like it has that problem in spades for sure, but, like, there's something about it that's just so much more personalized, maybe, that is making me enjoy it a lot. Like, for some reason, and never before in my hobby career, if I ever wanted to do this, like, I really want each dude to be the exact, like, kit that I gave him. And so, like, I put together these three guys that were whips last time and are now fully painted. And they have this thing called an auto pole. And what I gave them.
Auto pole?
Yeah, it's a gun. It's a gun attached to a. It's a halberd attached to a gun. That's what it is.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just like a bayonet.
Yeah. It's a bayonet. Yeah, but the gun's like on a pole, and it's like far and inconvenient away from you to pull the trigger. They're idiots. The Kano are not smart people, but they make up for it in religious zealotry, which is why I like them. But, yeah. What was I saying? Oh, they have auto poles. And what I actually gave them was flamethrowers attached to sticks.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. And so I got some flamethrower bits from Dan, and I found some of my own flamethrower bits. And even though these guys are converted, I'm going to chop their guns off and, like, the ammo, whatever the part of the gun that the ammo goes into is called. And I'm going to give them a little gas canister and some wires and, like, a little flamethrower. My main leader dude who I painted forever ago, he's not here. I'm going to convert him into not my leader dude.
Magnet sounds, I can just pick this whole thing up.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Oh, hold on. Let me organize it so that what I'm about to say makes sense.
Okay. You're seeing the pictures on the camera right now if you're watching the video version of the podcast, but we're not.
No.
So we're going to have an awkward silence where Scott sets up his fucking charcuterie board of miniatures over there.
Okay, so the three I want you to look at are the ones by the Blue Space Marine, the Ultramarine.
Okay.
So those are the guys that were whipped last episode that are now done. Kind of speed painting, 2 hours each one. Those are the ones that I want to give the flamethrower poles to. Excited to convert those dudes. I'm excited to convert my main word keeper into a sniper, because I have a guy with a long rifle, and he has, like, the perfect posture for the extra bit that comes out of the Cawdor extra sprue bits.
Oh, yeah.
I'm deep, bro.
Those primo extra sprue bits.
They have two Cawdor ones. I have both of them. I'm deep.
Are these, like, Forge World ones, or are they
one was,
kits?
One wasn't.
Okay.
I think that, like, there's, like, a head kit that Forge World made. Actually, there's two head kits and two weapon kits, and I have all four of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them are resin. But yeah, so I'm excited about those conversions. A long time ago, Vince bought me, or I bought it when we were at Games Day. What is it called? Warhammer World. He bought me the big fancy Cawdor Executioner, which is a hanger on. It's someone that you hire. And I'm probably never going to hire him because he's way too risky to hire. But I'm going to use that model as my new leader. He also has a great sword, so I'm gonna chop his axe off and give him a great sword. And so I have all these, like, conversions that I'm very excited to fucking do. And the painting is super fun, having a lot of fun. I don't know, just doing anything, man. Doing literally anything. Like, these guys don't necessarily look like my old version of the Cawdor one, or even the second one that I painted. And they're close enough. It doesn't matter. Yeah,
you put them down on a table, or even if you took a glamour shot of all of them together, like, they will feel, like, cohesive.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah. I have another three that I started.
I see that. Like, so, you are really fucking working on these things.
The one that's the brightest yellow,
mm-hmm.
that's what they all looked like after the airbrushing stage, and also one stage of applying the black contrast paint.
Mm-hmm.
So then the one in the middle, the one closest to the corner, all that was applying a green wash from TT Combat to that lime green shawl. And on the front, it doesn't look like much. But on the back, I'm really happy with the volumes that just popped out of that from the airbrushing Zenithal and that wash. It looks really nice.
Yeah, over the back of his shoulders especially.
Yeah, the shoulders especially. The front is not a whole lot going on the front, so it's not very impressive.
Yeah, it still shows some of that depth of volume.
Yeah, yeah.
The fucking weapon that guy is using there is the most goddamn ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
It's got a candle, bro!
He's got a candle with a giant flamethrower head with just, like, a duct tape knife above it.
Yeah.
That, like, yeah, if you get within 2 inches of the front of this flamethrower, I could poke you a little bit.
Yeah.
Like that. I'm for it.
That's what they all should have. That's the weapon that they should all have. But the best thing about that, that's their best weapon that they have in the entire faction. None of those weapons come in the plastic Cawdor kit.
No!
Not a single one! Notice they're all auto poles. They're all gun poles instead of flamethrower poles. But anyways, the last guy that's fully painted, the one that I sent you guys a picture of with the pink OSL,
mm-hmm.
which I want to talk about that pink OSL in the extended podcast today, which you get if you're a patron for $5. That guy started out the exact same way as the one right next to him with that airbrush thing. And I was painting that guy, and I just did not give a fuck. I was like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And it was so fine. And it was like, so the green has the khaki has like a green shadow to it, right? Do you ever feel like when you start a model a certain way, you kind of feel like you're locked into a certain path forward?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're kind of, you're passing different exits on the freeway. And because you've passed them, like, yes, you're like, I'm beyond that point.
Exactly.
I gotta keep going.
So a point that I would be beyond and not be willing to change was the shading on the khaki shorts, mm-hmm, is green. Cause I did the green first and then I finished with the khaki. And so I was like, I'm not going to change the shadow of the khaki. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. So I changed the shadow of the khaki to brown red on the guy with the pink candle thing. And it still shows up a little bit, like on his sleeves and stuff, but like mostly on his lower portions. I just changed it. And now that, like, a previous version of me would have been like, that was a massive pain in the ass. But I was like, I don't care. And I'm really enjoying painting right now. And so I just did it. And it was fun. And then I was like, I brought home a pink, a hot pink color, because I don't have any hot pink colors in with the TT Combat paint range that I'm using right now. And I was like, I'm going to do this pink OSL. Like, I was completely done. And I was like, I'm going to do all that OSL now. And I was just having fun. I was like, I didn't matter how I'd painted the model, like what I invested time in. I was like, I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. And it felt really good to kind of paint super freely like that. I've never felt that way before. I always feel like I have a plan, a process. I'm going to stick to it. Yeah.
So it sounds like, and tell me if I'm interpreting this correctly, that what it's exciting you in the hobby right now is the individuality and the excitement around a campaign system of a game, and that's getting you hyped to build, to convert, to paint, to play. And right now that's Necromunda.
Yeah It's like every single dude is like a small mini RPG character, right?
Yeah.
And they all have their own progression, and they all have, like, experience they can gain, skills they can earn, equipment they can buy to become better and better. And some of them may die. Some of them may go to the doctor and get healed. Some may miss a – like, there's just so much – there are so many things. They can get captured and bought back, captured and never come back by your opponents. Like, I captured one of Dan's minis after our game, and I sold him back to him. So, like, there's just so much stuff that can happen that's just so fun and flavorful. And it's, yeah, the individuality, you're totally right, is huge. I don't know. It's hard to explain. I feel like a hypocrite because I'm really enjoying playing, because it's so, it has one big problem that's very, very similar to Age of Sigmar. But otherwise, it has like all this other stuff around it that are just so much fun. Normally, I don't like the game outside of the game. I kind of hate that, honestly, because I want to play the fun game. But this has just so much fun outside of it.
Well, I think the campaign aspect of the resources gained and upgrades made and changes that you've done between the sessions can kind of forgive a lot of that, because you feel like you're building towards something, whereas rules on top of rules and bloat and intricacies and gotcha stuff between in a game where you sit down for 3 to 4 hours and you play that, and it is what it is, and you don't take away anything from it in terms of longevity of affecting your next game, it feels like it needs to be running at optimum capacity in that 3 to 4 hour game. Whereas here, like, you can forgive some things because there's other aspects to it that really excite you. And you get to explore that stuff in your hobbying time, as opposed to just, well, do I need to tweak my list, or do I need to do things differently, or do I just play another game again? I guess we'll run it back and then hopefully it goes differently or whatever. It's like you're putting an awful lot on that game table for a game like 40K or Age of Sigmar, whereas opposed to this, it's like I can get so much satisfaction out of other things that if the game is still fun,
yeah,
it feels better.
It's not terrible. I mean, totally admonish the game. It's not a bad game, but it's like, you know, it's just like GW's typical, you know, miniature war game.
Yes.
With like a bunch of kind of broken rules. Yeah. Like you can break Necromunda. If you know what you're doing, you can. And it's just like, that isn't the point of it. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to play competitively. And I have a really hard time with that.
Yeah. As soon as those words left your mouth, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, Angel John is like, yeah, for sure.
For sure, dude. But for sure.
The 87% of me that's Devil John is like,
dude.
Really?
Yeah, you're gonna. I know, and that's the problem, and I'm struggling with it. And so the way that I'm fighting that is, me and Edward have been watching a lot of cult based documentaries. Did I ever talk about this with you?
I think so.
Yeah, and so I've been really inspired by the cult leaders, and so I've given all my guys, like, I've already explained this to you, haven't I? Like, I've given them all biblical names.
Yes, I think it was on the podcast.
And so because of that, they're just so much more fun to think of, like, what would Jedediah do? And that helps me to play less competitively when I, like, ask, like, what is Solomon going to do in this situation? Mm. Is he gonna be tactically wise, or is he going to, like, run down mid for the emperor and, like, get blasted? And so that helps a little bit to make me play better. So, and it actually worked out for me, like, in my first game.
I mean, cults got something right.
I know, dude. Like, my cult leader with a fucking greatsword seriously ran down and chopped Dan's dude down and chopped another guy in half and somehow fucking survived in this world that has mostly guns. So, yeah, he is maybe truly the one mighty and strong.
Mm.
But yeah, that's me, man. That's my Necromunda stuff.
Okay. I think maybe it's easier for me to piggyback on a similar thing for me for a mini that I painted, which was this is the Kalenium Butcher from Kingdom Death.
Actually, extract this thing.
Yeah.
This giant cookie.
You could just pick up the whole sheet, too.
Oh, yeah, I'll just turn it around. Do that.
So this is a model. As of today, as of the recording of this, this is the only version of that model that exists outside of Kingdom Death's headquarters.
Fancy, bro.
Yeah. So for the first time in my life, I received a model in the mail because Mr. Poots was so kind enough to send this to me.
Mr. Poots.
I received this model in the mail and had no idea what it looked like. I had never, there were no pictures that had been spoiled or anything. It hadn't even been seen before outside of their building. And so I got to, like, truly experience something of, like, when you're a little kid and you open up a Christmas present and it wasn't a toy that you maybe even knew about, but, like, it's totally your jam and it's whatever. And that was just such a fun fucking moment. But it was also a fun side story of, like, they have all of their build instructions online and they're really, really well done. But obviously this model does not have build instructions online yet. So I was like, Adam, do you know how to build this thing? And he's like, I don't think we have that created yet. So I had to build it not knowing what it looked like fully completed. and it was like, you know, a lot of pieces. But I did it, and it worked out. And like I dry fitting everything, kind of figuring, making sure things were put together in the right order. It worked. But how this connects to what you were just talking about is, it reminded me how much I enjoy painting models that seem to have a purpose that is like a reusable purpose. And so that can be, you know, it can be for an Age of Sigmar army, or it can be for your D&D game, it can be for Necromunda. But I often find that one thing that I've struggled with and why I've fallen off the large miniature war game bandwagon is that, like, there's such a commitment of scheduling those games and or joining a league or making the sheer amount of time and to play those big games as opposed to it's our regular Saturday night board game group or it's my regular every other Sunday D&D group. Things like that where it's like, I know this is going to hit the table a bunch. You know, I know that we're going to get reuse out of it. I know that it's not, you know, I'm painting 60 zombies that their purpose is to just take up a big chunk of stuff on the board and die. And they are to look as cool as I care to make them look over that time. Like something about painting that felt like I'm going to play this game with this badass monster. And I want him to look like I envision the world to look, how I envision the version of the game that they've built that is so unique to me in their world building and their lore. As simplistic that it is, but it's still very, very fun and unique. And to just like, oh, I'm just going to have more fun hobbying with this because it feels like something I'm going to reuse and it feels like the experience I want this game to be.
Dang. That was very eloquent. That last sentence you just said, the experience you want it to be.
Yeah.
Do you think also it's also related to in part like how epic and cool the thing that you are working on is going to be, or how much it's going to contribute to your experience?
Yeah.
Because like a unit of 20 zombies is like, yeah, whatever. They're going to run in and they're going to tie someone up and die, or just be around for a while. But this fucking guy is huge and awesome, and he's going to do something way cooler than that. Yeah. Is that part of it too?
Yeah. He is the big, nasty boss. He is the thing that, you know, the boss fight is going to be intricate and sweaty and stressful and wild. And I want him, as you move that miniature around the table, to be intimidating and scary. And so that makes it more fun to hobby. It makes it more fun to paint that. It makes me more excited to play that game with it. It's not just like how I want to put more weight and more effort in a D&D character, because it's like, look, we're going to be playing this D&D campaign for months and months and probably a year or more, and he's going to be on the table a lot. And so I have more and get more enjoyment out of the painting process for that, as opposed to something like a zombie, because it's more weight. It's more important. And that's where I'm like, I'm really feeling you out with the Necromunda stuff. It's like, yeah, you could end up with like 15 dudes of this, but they do all have a lot more weight, and it's not an unmanageable amount of character that you need to pull into these things to make it feel like it's your own.
Yeah, and that, you said something I repeated, and it was like, you said like it can exist in the world that you are painting it for.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the same about the Necromunda stuff. I feel like I'm obeying the laws and rules of the narrative of Necromunda, and I get to like make something that works for me in that world. And so it's like a double whammy, and I'm really enjoying it. Like, I painted that one guy with the pink OSL for way too long, way too long. But it turned out really nice, and I'm really happy for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a weird thing.
Yeah. And when you do an activation, this is a silly, like, minuscule part of it, but it to me it matters. When you do an activation, you just activate the one dude, right? One at a time?
Yeah, there are some ways to activate two at a time, but yeah, mostly one at a time.
Like, when you move that dude and you have him run up and use his, like, circular saw on somebody, like, he is now the focus of your attention, and he's the focus of your opponent's attention at that point, because just he is activating, and just he's doing something. And then you get this, like, little glimpse, could be 2 seconds, of, like, yeah, look at the sweet pink on there that's bouncing off of his hood and the side of his little weird metal helmet. Like, you get to appreciate those little micro moments of the work that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
Contrast that for like even like a unit of 5 Blood Knights. Like, you put in so much time and those look so good, but like they don't get to individually shine.
Yeah, like your Castellan, like the leader, gets to shine a little bit. But otherwise, like when someone says, all right, two guys die, I don't care which one I'm grabbing. Right. Right? I'm just pulling guys off.
Yeah, it's like when you're out in nature, man. And if you see like this giant flock of ducks, you're like, oh, wow, look, there's a flock of ducks. They're flying. As opposed to when you're out in nature and you're just walking down the road and there's this cute little duck. He's just sitting alongside the path, and you walk by him and you get to see and just appreciate this one duck. You get to take in his green mallard head. And when you see a full group of something, like, you don't get to appreciate the uniqueness and what makes that thing so beautiful. It's just numbers, man.
Mallard.
Dude, everything is about ducks in life.
It's all ducks.
Yeah, that's
all the way down.
It's going to be my next self-help book.
It's All Ducks by John Nevis.
It's All Ducks. But it's true. Like, when you see a pack of things, it has its own way of being impactful by the sheer number. Like, quantity is its own reward. But
yes, that is true.
When we're painting, the appreciation, at least I get from painting, is in not the quantity, but just the appreciation of the individuality of the model. And I feel like, oh, man, that really gets me going. And kind of to lead a little bit, and then we'll jump back over to Senior Red Helmet over here. To jump back over to the other things that I painted, and this was for my Army Painter Fanatics video that I did.
Did Army Painter make the best paint range? Did
they? You know how many?
I don't know.
I watched
video to find out.
You know how many comments I got on that video that just said, don't watch the video. The answer is no.
What? It's not that bad. It's totally fine.
You'll find out in the after party what I really feel about this pain.
Whoa, there's some fucking clickbait. I'm excited now, dude. Get me in there.
Yeah, I just clickbaited the clickbait.
Dude, wow.
But that got me. Here's the thing that I have always, I feel like is like the bloodline from why I started painting miniatures. And it has not really changed over time. I think that's something that will always see me through. And it's kind of an example shown in this video in these two models. Not so much the Ultramarine. You paint the Ultramarine.
You know what you're doing, you know?
So you can put it in the thumbnail, yeah, okay? That's what you're
doing.
There's
a very specific purpose.
Right. But the Squig. I've never painted a Squig before in my life. I just was like, I've never painted a Squig. I was just going through my kits. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I got Squigs. I got to figure out what thing I'm going to do. And I started when making the decision about what models I was going to paint for this video. I started with Squig first. And then I wanted to have a separate miniature that would be contrasting in the types of materials, much more hard, less organic or whatever. Obviously, Space Marine fits that. But we started with the Squig. And it was just the – some models are just fun. Yeah, they're just cool. They're just neat. And I don't need – a game, a purpose, a whatever to paint them if I just enjoy the model. And that is kind of one thing I've always done in mini painting is like, I just got this cool one-off mini. I don't have exact purpose for it. And that's okay because it can live in the moment of me painting it, enjoying it, and then me having it forever on my shelf. And that's a part of what excites me in the hobby that like when all else fails, I always can fall on that. In finding models and collecting models that I really like because one day I'm going to be in the mood to paint something. I'm not sure what. Oh, that's right. I got a unit of Squigs. I want to paint this Squig. And it's just so much fun. It was just like, oh, just when I paint something, it's like I see a version of the model that I didn't recognize by just the box art. You know?
Yeah, like this pale pink flesh.
Yeah, just these weird little folds that are very true to like it's got little like it's got loose skin kind of, right? And it's like I never thought Squigs kind of have loose skin. He's like the way the folds run over.
I'm like thinking about that.
Yeah. It's just so it's so much fun. Squig down. Luckily he's mostly the shape of a marble, so he's probably fine.
God, I'm sorry.
That's fine. I'm not worried about it. But yeah, that's another thing when I think about it's not a specific thing right now. Like my hobby, I'm so into just painting one-offs of all these random things. But it's always something that I know that like I'll enjoy. I'll sit down at my desk and I'll enjoy, which is, you know, leading back to Kingdom Death. And it's something I said in the video is it's one of the reasons I just really appreciate Kingdom Death is that they put so much effort into making one-off unique character models that are just like, man, that just looks so cool. That's so fun to paint. It's so unique. It's like, oh, wow, this is a weird nurse lady, but she's wielding a great sword, but she's like standing in some kind of goo. And it's like, wow, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to use that for, but it's cool. And I want to paint it someday.
That's cool. Yeah, I was looking at that Squig and I could tell right away what you were saying. It just seems like a very satisfying thing to paint as well. I wonder when sculptors are sculpting something. If they're like, oh, this part of the model is going to be good to paint, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't think about that because they don't do a lot of painting. But, like, that model has a lot of really satisfying anatomy to paint. It's the same as, the cloth on these Cawdor dudes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really satisfying shapes that swoop into other shapes. And it's just lots of good blending opportunity. And it's just, like, it's just fun to paint. And I absolutely agree. I would totally paint a Squig. Because also, it's kind of – it's half the size of a model. And it doesn't have a bunch of bullshit on it.
Yeah, once you're like, you just lean into doing that skin in the most fun, exciting way for you to paint it.
Yeah.
And then when you're done with that, you're 80% done with the model.
Yeah.
You know? And
How
long did the Squig take?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was like 3 hours.
Okay.
Because I painted both of those models in one work day. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, about 3 hours.
Nice.
But of that, it was like 2 hours was the skin. Like, I was just enjoying that and really putting in some time on the light tones of the paint range to really a wide variety of them to really feel like you can usually find chinks in the armor of a paint range by their colors that have a lot of white pigment in them. Like if this starts to get chalky, if this starts to separate, if this starts to break down pigment, then, you know, that's a big red flag for me in a paint range. And so I'm like, I'm going to put a bunch of these colors that if you can't nail these, you know, I'm not going to be happy with your paint range. I'm going to put them through their paces. And so that was good.
Okay. Very cool.
All right. So you've got a Darth Vader there.
D Vader, dude. Daddy Vader. I have a question. So I don't know where to start. I went to the source, and I've been looking at this RPG book thing for a long time, and I haven't been buying it, and I decided to finally buy it, and it's called...
Spider-Porn?
Yes. It's got that little cute, that little Martin, that little, what's his name? Shandrala, what's his fucking name? Marcel?
I'm at
Timmy? Timmy the Spider? It's got him in a bunch of fucking revealing outfits.
It's just got a giant boner on him.
Bringing it all back! So it's called, one of them's called Age of Rebellion, the other one's called Age of Empire, and the other one's called Age of Dawn of the Force. I can't remember what it's called. There's three versions of this Star Wars RPG, and in each one you can play as Jedi people, you can play as rebels rebelling against Empire people, you can play as bounty hunters and stuff like that. So each game, each system is like a variety of the main Star Wars RPG, and I picked the Force using Jedi one. And it's like an intro to RPGs. So, like, I'm going to be the DM. I want to try to be better at being a DM. I think it's going to be a lot of fun if I'm not shit at it. But this one is, like, a great, like, helping aid. So every single encounter you do, there are seven encounters, helps you to learn the game.
Cool.
So the first one, you do, like, your first skill check about and how they do skill checks. And then in the next encounter, you do something called an opposing check, where it's like you are competing against someone else and you are competing skills. What does that look like, you
sure.
know, when you're not just, like, interacting with an inanimate object? And then I don't know how I think the third encounter is going to be a melee or a combat-focused encounter.
Yep.
And that's awesome. And it has, like, canned responses for, like, if you're the DM and you're, like, if you need to play as an NPC.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps you a lot to make a fun and compelling experience if you're a beginner DM player like me. And so I'm really excited about that. And I have a funny side story. So I've heard that RPG sessions are difficult to plan. Like, people will not play for years on end because of, you know, the scheduling conflicts. Yours, yeah. Not so much. Yours is pretty good. But you've heard that before, right?
Yeah. If you don't make it a regular scheduled thing, it can be very difficult.
Yeah. And so I reached out to four dudes to play. And I was like, hey, you guys want to play the Star Wars RPG? When are you available? First person was like, I want to play. I'm available on these days. And all four of them replied. And every single one of them had availability on Sunday evening at 5 p.m. And it's like, in 10 minutes, we had found a day that worked perfectly, and everyone I asked was in and free. And I was just like, what the fuck? So it was so incredible that was so simple. I've never, you know, planned an RPG session before, yeah. So I was expecting the worst. I mean, just planning things with adults, you know?
It is.
It's five adults is hard, right?
Difficult, yeah.
But everyone's fucking down, and so this Sunday, I'm gonna try it out. We'll see how that is. But...
Oh, man, so are you DMing it?
I'm DMing it.
Oh, so
yeah.
We're going to be DMing at the same time. I'm nice. DMing Sunday Night Pathfinder.
I'm going to ask you a bunch of DMing questions then.
Over lunch or right now?
I mean, like,
in the middle of it.
Well, maybe. I mean, yeah. I figure, like, after a session, I'll ask you some questions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have some right now, too, as well.
Sure.
But I bring this up to say that I have been and I'm still very jazzed about Star Wars. And this question I had for you that you kind of reminded me of before we started recording was, you know, I have this ongoing thing with Jay where I'm supposed to be painting a 40K army.
Mm-hmm.
And I still want to do that. It's fucking February. I got fucking time.
I feel like you're backing out of this already.
No. I want to do it. I want to have Dark Elder army painted. I'm so excited.
I'm just saying that there is a clickbaity title video theme there that just shits on Jay, and he's the reason why you quit painting your army. I'm just saying that's an option.
Jay, watch out. And I have a Necromunda warband that I have an ongoing campaign on. And sometimes, I don't know if this is just because we do this for a living, but sometimes it can feel like you should be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
You should be painting this thing, you know?
100%.
I got an army that I'm working on. I got a video I'm working on. It could be anything, right, for any of us.
There's a level of guilt of any time you're not doing
it. Yeah, yep. Yeah. I should be working on my Golden Demon entry.
Yeah.
And so I was sitting there, this is last night, and I was like, okay, you know, my buddy had left. We played Shatterpoint, and we had, like, watched a dumb fucking movie called Iron Master, which is some Italian Conan the Barbarian ripoff.
Oof.
And it's like, okay, it's like 8 p.m. right now. What am I going to do? I watched the second half of Return of the King, And I was like, okay, it's fucking 11 right now. Now what am I going to do? And I was like, I'm going to paint. And I was like, I should paint Cabalite Warriors, or I should paint Gangers. And I was like, how about I paint a fucking Darth Vader, dude? Yeah. And so I just did it. I just painted the Darth Vader. I didn't finish it, obviously. I painted his head red.
Is there a version of Darth Vader where he has a red helmet?
Oh, dude, fuck it.
No.
I want a glossy red Darth Vader. He's glossy black. I'm making glossy red. I don't know if you saw the new Star Wars movies. They changed all kinds of bullshit with Star Wars.
That's true.
If you've seen Ahsoka, Star Troopers never been different in Ahsoka. So if they can do it, I can do it too. And I want to make him red.
Is he going to be all red then?
So yeah. So basically, Darth Vader is all black, but he's broken up because of different materials, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to use the same exact materials, just all in red.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you're working with different finishes and different surfaces, and you could have fun with texture and stuff like that, too.
I don't know what to do with the sword, though. Like, do I make the sword a black lightsaber, like a dark sword?
No.
Do I make it red, too?
These are all questions that I was not prepared for.
Anyways,
I thought you were gonna ask me questions about DMing and asking me about fucking black lightsaber. Yeah, it's just a black lightsaber is just not gonna show. It's like it's gonna
be like gray and white.
Well, not
be black. You know,
you basically, because it's so thin and skinny, you're just gift it. You could do it like a glossy black and then just a heavy body white as just the thin line of where the light hits it strongest.
I could try to do that. Yeah.
But if you do that and the rest of him's red, it's going to disappear. Like, you're not even going to see it.
Yeah.
You could do it as a contrasting color.
That's really breaking rules.
Yeah, it's breaking rules. That's breaking rules.
But I mean, I'm only breaking rules, but only kind of breaking rules, yeah, right? I'm painting them red.
Yeah, because the contrasting color would be green, and then that'd be Luke's.
That'd be not okay.
Luke's Return of the Jedi saber.
Yeah.
Which then you got to answer so many lore questions about the why. And then he looks like Christmas Vader if you do that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I have some things to figure out. Maybe I don't paint him all red. Maybe I go for like kind of like a, he's got a brown leather cloak and like, I don't know, other weird things. Like, I want to make like a,
ooh, I like that.
I want to like paint like stuff on his armor, like stripes and stuff. Like, I'm trying to think of like a battle Vader, you know, like.
What about like, yeah, almost like a Mad Max Vader. Like, this Vader doesn't just sit in the giant ship and get his shit shined every day, and everything is matchy-matchy. It's like, no, this version of Vader had to go out onto Tatooine. You know, he spent years there searching down the fucking moisture farms and stuff. And yes. So what he wears now is a little bit more in tune with the rugged lifestyle, you know?
There you go.
I like that.
Something like that, you know? I want a more hardened, you know, and kind of like he's in the shit, Darth Vader.
I like that.
But that being said, I am painting his helmet totally glossy red. I'd love two pieces of feedback. One about the OSL pink, but also about, let's do Vader now because we're on topic. So I painted it with a viewing angle from the very front. So not off to his side, but yep. It's working everywhere else around the helmet, mostly, especially on the back.
Yeah.
But on the front, it ain't working. I don't think it's working. And I don't know why. I think maybe I don't have enough pure white. I don't know what it is.
I think it's, you picked probably the most difficult angle to make it work.
Yeah, but like what other angle?
Because everything, it's symmetrical.
It's like staring right at you. It's like it's the one you want to do, right?
Right. Well, because his lightsaber is down into his right, so if you're looking at him straight on, it's down into my left. The more dynamic light angle would be above and to his right. And so then you get the bounces on opposite sides. So top right, you get the main light. And then bottom left, you get the bounce light that's all coming from the lightsaber.
That was the other hard thing, is like, how do I make a bounce with red armor and a red lightsaber or a black lightsaber?
Yeah, that's where you
do like a green one. I don't want to do a green one.
Yeah, you got to do a different evil color. You could do it.
There are no different evil colors.
You could do like a nasty, like almost starting at like a mid-tone rust up to a neon orange, because it feels similar, but in real true orange isn't anywhere else in the model. And then where that bounce light hits, it will feel different than the red, but it won't be like gaudy.
Okay, actually, to piggyback on that idea, so red can be like a warm red and a cold red, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like Chimera the Red is very warm red, but Ultra Krill Red is like a blue. So I could use like a, not, it's not blue. I could use a colder red for his armor, which I need a saturated red. I was working with TT Combat's like most saturated red, and it's not that amazing. But if I do like a cold red and then like an orangey red, maybe for the lightsaber, or even just straight up orange, that would help to kind of break it up a little bit.
Yeah. I think just having it straight, that light being basically straight on, is difficult. There's because having a ton of,
I knew it would be
around his like nose down to his jaw. That's where it gets really tough because you have a lot of really tiny surfaces, and so you're just kind of painting them all uniformly.
It's all flat shit. It's, yeah, and I try to like paint it like white a couple times. And I was like, this is just looks like total dog shit. I don't know what to do.
It's although you switching the light angle is from where you're at right now is actually not much work.
It isn't
a lot of the stuff that you've done. Still, you don't even need to repaint it.
Yeah, I kind of just riffed it on like the sides of the helmet, and the back of the helmet kind of makes a little bit of sense, but not a lot of sense.
Well, you've already have a good amount of high contrast, which is where you're going is to being really shiny. You're going to need to paint it like NMN, which you've done.
Yeah. So I need some more punches though.
Yeah.
I need some more white. I need some more white punches. I need an actual saturated red paint.
Yeah, you punch it up to even like sketch what you've done with like a pure heavy bodied white over the top of that, and then just start fucking glazing the red on it, and then you'll get that screaming red.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's gonna be sweet. I mean,
I hope so.
Alternatively, he's already painted primed black, but
just give him a redhead, dude.
Just fucking redhead. Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good start. And that's the kind of fun thing. It's like, oh, I want to sit down and paint for a while. It's like, if you were focusing yourself of like what you must accomplish tonight, what you is on your list of must get done things.
Which that happens. It has to happen sometimes.
It has to happen sometimes. Know? But when you don't force yourself to do that, you'll do things like this that you're like, there's no logical reason why I should paint this figure this way this night. And you just kind of free yourself. And those times I find like I learn stuff more, or I come up with more creative ideas. It gets my brain thinking in a different perspective than what I usually apply to. It's like, okay, well, this is a leather strap. So how do I want to paint leather straps? I'm like, well, what if I didn't have to go through that same boring process every time? Darth Vader's helmet is a totally different color. Like, the fuck? Man, you're crazy.
I know. It's so stupid to say.
It's so
stupid. You know, it's like, no one fucking cares, dude. It's just a made-up character. You can paint it however you want. But it's such a – there's a lot of people's
cares, God.
A lot of legacy. A lot of nerd legacy behind it.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Like, the people that actually, you know, spent thousands of hours of their life to create these characters and to make movies and to write books and all that, you know what? They don't care. But the people that read those books and watched those movies, they really fucking care.
Awesome. Let's talk about your Ultramarine.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Is that not what's exciting you in the hobby right now?
You know, I find that Space Marines are so freaking weird, and I know you don't paint them anymore. But I will tell you this: they got. I mean, James Workshop did sell his soul to the devil for that very specific layout of armor.
How did he sell his soul to the devil?
He did it because, at least for me, it's got to be for a lot of freaking people in this hobby, it's never not fun. It's like I have never painted a Space Marine, even when it's like, well, I'm going to paint a Space Marine, or like, I'm not jonesing to paint my own unique faction, or I've never painted a Salamander before, I'm going to try that. No, I'm just like, I'm painting an Ultramarine. It was still so much fun. It's so dumb how fun it is. I just like it. I like working with the volumes. I like figuring out these shapes of like, okay, this is a cylinder, and then this is a cylinder, and then this is a cylinder. How do I paint these? It gets me to run the repetitions in my head, and this level of satisfaction of getting it right, and it looks right to your eye. And then I feel like every time I paint a Space Marine, I've like clocked hours that make me better as a painter for the next time I paint something that's not an exact cylinder, but the basic shape is a cylinder, because I've run those reps that painting that weird orbital shaped shoulder pad, I'm better at highlighting specular highlights on a sphere and making my light consistent all the way across the model. It's just, I don't know, it's fun. And I always paint them slightly differently. This one's kind of a middle ground of he's kind of grungy, he's kind of worn, he's not perfectly smooth, he's got a lot of texture, he's got character on him, but he's not full grim dark of all just so many enamels and all that stuff. He's just kind of a fun middle ground, and working to make it still read as that nice vibrant blue in a Space Marine that says Ultramarine while still not being pristine, which I think you're not supposed to do. I think aren't Space Marines like they're always supposed to be super clean? I don't know.
I don't know, dude. Obviously, like, these guys can be, like, in battle.
Yeah, in the middle.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of battle. I can't. I don't have my, you know.
Some fucking guy's polishing your goddamn shoes while you're blasting something out with a bolter, dude? No.
Yeah. I mean, there is, was it Lionel Johnson or one of those fucking Dark Angels is actually, there's a model on his base that is polishing his sword while the dude's waiting into battle. So maybe that is a thing. I don't know.
But, I got my fucking shoe polishing servitor, dude. That's what the rich Space Marines have, dude.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I assume that they, you know, they just find these little humans on whatever planets and be like, you've been upgraded.
You've been upgraded to the
shining duty.
The service of the Emperor.
Yeah. But yeah, that was something that I painted. Again, it was like this. It's a one-off. Doesn't have a purpose, whatever, you know. You know what I found?
I love the TMM. What's the gold on the Aquila?
The gold on the Aquila
is dirty. I like it.
It's the okay. So it's just whatever their mid-tone gold is from the Fanatics range.
Okay.
The new Fanatics gold, and then one layer of their black wash, one layer of their sepia wash. No, one layer of their dark brown wash. So strong tone, and then one layer of their sepia wash, which I love. I love a good fucking sepia wash, dude. oh my God, I'm so in love with sepia wash. It's so good. So yeah. A sepia wash makes TMM golds look so good. That was pretty fun.
So you unintentionally created a very good and honest clickbait idea for a title. And basically the idea is that, or the title would be, painting Space Marines makes you a better painter. Or, you know, something like that. Because that's your thesis. And it sounds like you believe that, you know.
Hold on, I'm going to put this in my notes real quick.
Yeah, whenever you, it sounds like it's true for you, and I totally get what you're saying. They're like it's almost like an artistic exercise.
Yes,
it's like the shapes are so obvious, and they're so, but it still works as a character, so it's not an exercise, but you can have fun and kind of experiment at the same time.
Yeah, they do. They are the academic bust of 32mm. Sci-fi models.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, even beyond sci-fi, like just understanding shapes, volumes, how light works, you know, and still keeping the color saturation and stuff that you want. And also because they're largely one color, once you figure out what your color recipe is for that armor, you're now allowing your brain to focus just on those other important factors that make painting accurately work really well. So
I think there's still a bridge to gap in painting things that are not so mechanical. Like obviously all the shapes do translate, but if for someone who doesn't understand how they translate, it's going to feel like painting a cloak or painting a cloth kilt is going to feel different. There's some difference in like how shading kind of like, you know, blends into a mid-tone and stuff like that, and how quickly you do it, and how you can, you know, go back in the highlight for the next volume, whereas everything on the Space Marine is very like very nice and cut.
Yes.
But I totally agree with you though. It's a very good exercise.
You ready for a tie-in that you didn't see coming?
Yeah, dude. I always love fucking Ninjan tie-ins.
All right. So
ducks?
Dude, we're going to there's less mallards in this one.
Fuck. But, okay, I thought we were getting back to the ducks.
So equating how painting a Space Marine makes you a better painter is
your workshop in the video right now.
Almost a one-to-one transition to how dungeon mastering works.
Mm.
So to equate it to dungeon mastering is like, you need to really understand the nuts and bolts. You need to understand the mechanics. You need to understand the rules. You need to know how those skill challenges work. You need to know how ranged combat works. You need to know, you know, what's the difference between melee and movement and all those things, interacting with the world. Just like you need to understand how to paint volumes and paint light on a Space Marine. However, the real learning and aha moments happen once you've understood that, and then that becomes almost subconscious knowledge that you are not focusing on that. And in the middle of your Star Wars RPG session, you are focused on what is the world doing as these characters are interacting with it? And you're focusing on how this NPC and his motivations and what he wants out of this, you know, this trade from these, you know, space pirates. What does he want? And how is he going to talk with them? And all that. And so you're focusing on what really makes it interesting, unique to the players around your table. And that's also the most fun, at least for me as a DM, it's the most fun I have, is just seeing where it goes because you're not focusing on the rules. You have to know them first, because when those times come up where he's negotiating for wanting to get your stolen cargo, okay, at some point we're going to have to run a skill challenge for him against you or whatever, you know, your bartering skill challenge or whatever. But your brain isn't focused on, okay, shit, I've got to run the bartering rules. I got to blah, 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 blah. Because if you're mentally there, you are not mentally present for the fun interaction. The conversation that the players have with the NPCs is what's the most fun. It's what they remember. It's what they laugh and tell stories about 6 months from now. It's not the rolling of the dice. Mm. And so you learning how to paint all this stuff in a space marine, what we'll really get out of it is that that stuff becomes second nature, and you can focus on the uniqueness of this future model that you're painting. Let's say that future model is a duck.
You did it! We got there!
We got there. So this does that?
Yeah, so what's the D&D equivalent of the Space Marine then?
From a model perspective or just from running a game?
No, it's like, so if the Space Marine teaches you the nuts and bolts of miniature painting that you could then go on to make intrinsic in your process and then paint whatever you want, what is the Space Marine version of DMing that I can learn the nuts and bolts for DMing, and then once I've learned them, then move on to do, you know, stuff that's more natural?
First and foremost, I am always completely transparent with my players that I do not know all the rules of the game we're playing inside and out.
Okay, that's important.
And if I ever get to that point, I feel like I have failed as being the best version of DM I could, because that means that that was a higher priority for me than just having fun and being present in the moment and us having telling a crazy story together.
Wow, that's quite the justification for not doing the work, John.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But what this also does is this puts the onus on the other players around the table to help you.
Yeah, figure it out.
Yeah, it's like, okay, guys, you're going to be doing this, and he's going to be doing this. You know, it's like, okay, does anyone know the very specifics? I think it's going to go this way. Someone else will help you out, you know, around the table. Because you as the runner of the game should not be responsible for all of the work.
Yes.
You know? So having that conversation up front with your players is like, we need to help each other out. That means that sometimes you got to help me with rules, and sometimes I'm not going to know. And sometimes I'm going to kind of remember, like I remember like 50% of the rule. This is how I basically run Dungeons & Dragons for the last 30 years. I know the basics of it. There are some real specifics that maybe I'm fuzzy on. I don't care. I will just run it off of my hip of, you roll a d20, you add this modifier. The NPC rolls a d20, he adds this modifier. There may be other pluses or minuses or blah, blah, blah. I'll fucking wing it. You already, you know, convinced his superior in an earlier scene that you guys are totally legit, you know, cargo salesmen. So you should get a +2 to this roll because you guys already, I'm giving you bonuses for you interacting with the world and having fun in the game. I'm going to give you game mechanics bonuses for that. I don't care if that's not exactly how the rules work.
Yeah.
Let's run it together, you know? And so you just kind of, you know, just enough to be dangerous. If you can know just enough to just feel like I kind of get what we're doing here, and the rest will just kind of run off the fly.
I have a lot of comments that I want to make.
Okay,
they're all related to DMing. So this is what you're bringing up right now. You didn't answer my question, by the way, you bastard.
Oh, what was
the question? Was what is the Dungeons and Dragons version of a Space Marine? Like, what can I cut my teeth on to learn how to DM faster than just diving into being a DM? Like, the Space Marine is that for miniature painting, right? You could paint it and learn faster than if you were to paint this big guy. That was what you were saying, right? Like, the Space Marine teaches you faster. I don't know if I didn't know you didn't say there was. I didn't know if there was Dungeons and Dragons equivalent.
Understanding how skill challenges work, how the skill system works, and how combat works. So in D&D, a big thing about that is, like, you know, what's action economy, how do spells basically work, understanding how you run monsters, right?
Yeah.
How do you do those? If you know that basic mechanics, that's pretty much all you need. If you get that to where that you don't have to reference the books and go through a lot of pages before you can, like, respond to people, you're fine. That's all you got to do.
Cool. I am concerned about, because this thing I'm playing is so hand-holdy,
I am concerned that I'm going to ruin the immersion when I'm like, oh, hold on, let me look for that response. You know, it's like, oh, you challenged this person physically? Okay, they're going to do this. And so I am concerned about that. And one thing I actually kind of thought about recently was that miniature war games and board games in general are so incredibly different than RPGs.
So different.
And I think I've realized this recently, and some of you out there may disagree. And obviously, this depends how you play an RPG. But, like, a game to me is a reduced version of the world with a specific rule set. And the whole point of the game is for you as the player to discover and master the system so you can optimize victory in whatever mechanical way that you can. That to me is where you find joy in a video game. You can see mastery. You can't touch it yet. But, like, in the game, you're going to try to figure out a path to get there to win. And that's not how role-playing works, right? There are crunchy systems. There are rules that you can play that are very deep, and you can try to figure out how to play RPGs like that. But I think for the most part, an RPG has fun through you and your people acting in a way, you know, pretending to be characters and, like, kind of living out a life in that character's life and what they would do, you know, role-playing, right? It's not about getting the right rule, doing the right optimized play to kill the monster in the best way. It's about creating a shared experience, which definitely exists in wargaming, but for me, those are totally different things to enjoy.
Yep. I think you're seeing a side of that there is some level of middle ground there.
Yes.
It's kind of like a unicorn, and I think you're kind of seeing that with Necromunda, where it's like,
maybe, yeah,
it is the you telling the story of your cult leaders, and it's you making them unique to the world that you envision them in and what makes them set, you know, stand apart. And then at the table, you're not so being so sweaty nerd about, like,
oh, I am,
you know, about optimizing winning. But you were also, on the flip side, if that is something that you appreciate, you are then playing with a level playing field rule system that you can play that way. I mean, you can also play that way in a RPG, too. Like, you can play really, I mean, we got players that are that way. Those kinds of people, I don't think need to play with me, but like that, there are people that really are their satisfaction is getting it right with the rules. So to each their own. But it was kind of tying back to what I kind of came to this realization in figuring out what I was passionate about going forward in the hobby when I was doing the Kingdom Death painting. It was like I tried to vocalize why a game like Kingdom Death is so much more fun for me, current version of John, than a game like Warhammer and a game like Age of Sigmar. And I think a part of that is like I've come to the realization that I'm a very competitive person. And with the data that I've collected on myself, the data that I've collected from the universe and where I feel I am in my life right now, I don't feel like competitive tabletop games, tabletop miniatures games, are what I want to do. I don't think that they scratch the itch for the competitive John that needs to be scratched to make me satisfied. I am lucky enough in that I have a different outlet in that in Magic, which is
like pulling rabbits out of hats.
Yeah, it's very fine tuned to be a balanced competitive game. And I just find I walk away from a session of my Saturday night playing Oathsworn in so much of a better mood than I walk away from a game of Age of Sigmar. And they're both pushing models around the table.
There's a reason for that.
And because we're doing it together. Like, it's like we're having fun together. It's not this constant ebb and flow of one of us is unhappy, you know?
See, okay, that's the problem, honestly. And this is the thing that I'm really trying to train myself out of, is that when something bad happens to you in a war game, it is also a good thing for your enemy, right? Oh. And so if you have a shitty attitude about it, and trust me, I have a shitty attitude, you're just making it worse for them. And
I know.
And like their cool thing is now lame because you're having a shitty time. And it's like, so just like an RPG, you guys are creating a battle story together. And there are big swings on both sides. And it's really important to like remember that
and not have a bad attitude when your opponent does do something awesome, because you really bring it down for them, right? And I'm not even saying you're doing any of that.
Oh, like, I do, yeah.
I've identified that. Yes, I do that.
I do that.
And so now I'm trying to be better about, like, we played a game of Dice Throne yesterday, me and my buddy Tripp. And in that game, it's like Yahtzee. You got five dice. And when you roll five sixes, you do your ultimate. And so you have three dice opportunity, three rolls to do that with all your five dice, just like in Yahtzee. And so on his last roll, he had 2d6 left. He had three sixes already collected and needed two more. And he rolled it and he got both sixes. And it was fucking epic.
Yeah.
And he destroyed me. And like in that moment, I was like, I could be an asshole and be shitty right now. But then I remembered a guy I played A Song of Ice and Fire with, who I destroyed in an insane move. And he high-fived me when I did it. And so instead, I like high-fived Trip. It was fucking awesome. I was happy for him. And then I moved on. We played Chatterpoint after that. And then I beat him. Like, it's like, there's a bigger story here, right?
There is.
And it's so hard to remember that.
It's about maturity. And
I'm not saying you're immature.
No, I am. But it kind of makes me realize I just need to play orcs, because I feel like if I just played orcs, I'd just be like, orc.
It helps. That helps me. Like, the theming of, like, what my dudes are doing. It helps me to fucking let go.
Yeah. Like, these they're big dumb orcs. They're using a fucking refrigerator as a catapult. Fuck yeah. Like, this is silly. This is not about, you know.
It's hard, though, dude.
It's hard. And I just find, like, when you're so invested in your hobby and so many hours and so many dollars and so much painting time and so much stuff, when you get to that table and there's like your full goddamn Blood Knight army is out there, 2,000 points, all painted, all your blood, sweat, and tears and fucking dollary dues are on that table, and you get just fucking crushed in the top of one.
And then Joe Cryer's over there.
And you're just like, fuck, why? Why did I waste my life with this? Why? You know,
that's the thing. You gotta find the right opponents.
Yeah, you gotta find the right people. And that's another thing with, God, I'm getting down this rabbit hole deep right now, but like, that's another reason why I just really like playing the games like an RPG or a cooperative board game, because like, I can have three buddies and we just fucking love this weird niche thing. I don't need to go find a new opponent to play a different army. I don't have to go to a tournament and smell somebody's BO and have them whining or me stressed out about, you know, losing and all this. Like, no, we like each other's company. We're friends. We are both dig this weird-ass Star Wars RPG. We're going to play it. You know, like, that's all you need is you can spend time with people that you want to spend time with, and that's good. You don't necessarily do that with competitive Magic, but it's like, I can just crush your face in 15 minutes, and then I don't have to deal with you anymore. I'm not stuck with you for 3.5 hours. But yeah.
There's a lot going on in gaming, I think, that is really interesting to talk about from a psychology perspective. Yeah. It's interesting.
So I through all this stuff, which is kind of the catalyst for me coming up with this idea for this video, it kind of came organically from me, like, working through this Kingdom Death model. In me, this video is kind of like my love letter to tabletop games that have fucking awesome minis. And Kingdom Death is a great example. It's because I realize how much I just get satisfaction out of those kinds of games. And I just wish I got that satisfaction full circle out of games like Age of Sigmar. The models are fucking insane. I love them. I love so many factions. I just want to paint them and collect them all and play it. I just wish I could get that full circle satisfaction, and I don't. So I want to dig and find that a middle ground version that can check more boxes than I'm currently checking. And I'm slightly, like, influenced by or inspired by or jealous of the stuff that you're doing with Necromunda, because it feels like you found that wave and you're riding it.
Yeah, dude,
like,
totally.
What is that wave for me? I want that wave. Is it Warcry? I've been telling myself that I've been buying every fucking Warcry box that comes out. It's not on our worlds. I played that a shitload, and it's not that. But their models are phenomenal. You know, and honestly, I came up with this idea, right?
Quality John idea. Here we go.
It involves multiple ducks. So so my idea was, and this seems so stupid, but I think it kind of works. What if I played, there's an Age of Sigmar RPG.
Yeah, dude.
And my buddy Blair, he bought the books and stuff, and so he's been reading the rules and stuff, wants to run one. But what if I just, like, use these awesome models that I fucking love that Games Workshop puts out for fantasy, and I painted those as the game we play. That's not like that. It's an RPG game. It's like all the, you know, oh, you guys are gonna come across the fucking squig farm, and there are all these herders that are like, you know, they use them like sheep, and they're out there and they're shearing them. I don't know, whatever. And like, so then there's actual squigs that we painted,
fuzzy squigs, dude.
Yeah, dude. And it's like one dude in your party. He's a beast man, so he's occasionally he's like when he talks, like the goat boy from Saturday Night Live.
Absolutely,
Jim Brewer. Like is that it? Is it, you know,
is there a way you could try that out without fully investing in it?
I think I got enough fucking painted models for Age of Sigmar that I could do it.
Okay, cool. But like, would you could you play like a meaningful RPG session? Like, would day zero of an RPG campaign like tell you enough about the experience that you'd be like, yeah, this is worth my time, or not?
Maybe. I think so.
A couple of sessions, maybe.
I think so. I think you'd have to kind of go into it making finagling the version of the game that leans into that's what you want. So whether that's building the world, the ecology, the basic story around the kinds of models and things you want to use, and even so far as like battles and stuff too. It's just like, oh yeah, I got so many fucking undead from Age of Sigmar painted. Y'all gonna be dealing with a horde of zombies at some point. I got 120 zombies painted, yo. They're all gonna be on the table, right? Like, I want to build that epic thing based around the cool models that I have painted or that I have bought and want to paint. I'm basically trying to manufacture what I want Age of Sigmar to be for me.
Right.
But instead of playing Age of Sigmar, I'm doing all the same steps, but I get to do the one-off paint jobs that I enjoy doing, and I get to turn it into a game that I like. I think there's a thing there.
There is. What about Silver Tower?
Yeah, I mean, I've played Silver Tower once, and then my daughter and I played a good bit of Cursed City.
I know that one is not great.
Yeah, they're all kind of okay. But honestly, if I'm going to play that, I mean, like, dude, there's so many better cooperative board games out there. Oh, the same. We're playing Oathsworn right now.
You'll join it?
Yeah. Fucking loving it, dude.
I want to play it. I only played it like one time.
Dude, you're at the second boss is, oh man, we're in the middle of the fight. We had to end the session cause, we're getting too late. And so this Saturday is going to be, whew, I'm scared.
Just like, walking right into it.
Yeah. We're in the middle of the fight, man. It's so much fun. It's such a cool game. So yes, I'm like, there's these other really all tied up in a nice package, better versions, tighter versions than something like a Silver Tower for me. But I still want to play it. Like, I would be like, oh yeah, sweet. I got this Warcry Warband that I just like. Oh, and we go to Adepticon and people are playing Warcry. I want to play that. Or like, we have an AvinciCon and we're hanging out and like, I know Uncle Adam and Sam play Warcry. Like, I want to have my cool little version of Necromunda where it's. I really like the like tweaking the certain weapons and
the
certain build kits and all that stuff. That's not in Warcry.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get a lot of options of list building and which individual models you want. But, you know, basically they need to bring Mordheim back is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, you can still play it if you want. I think one thing that I don't mean to discourage you in saying this, one thing that's helping me a lot with Necromunda is that I'm surrounded by a bunch of other hobbyists that are also fucking vibing with it.
We're all
sharing pictures of our gangs and shit, what we're spending credits on and the results of our matches and shit talking and stuff. And it's like I took a picture of that candle boy and I was like, please don't kill this man. He needs to grow up to be my leader. And like,
candle boy needs to become a candle man.
Yeah. And John Schaefer was like, his fucking picture's going on a milk carton, dude. Everyone's killing this guy. And I was like, fuck, dude. So like that kind of interaction makes it a lot more enjoyable for sure.
Hundo P. Like, I think like my heyday of loving Age of Sigmar was when, you know, we had a league. We had 15 local players in a not very big city that were playing all, you know, 15 players and 13 different factions. And you could always find someone to play. There was your guaranteed league games. It was all these, there's all so much excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably will get back to that one day because there's so much of Age of Sigmar I really like. So I'm not saying I'm like, fuck that game or fuck Games Workshop games. I'm not saying that. But I think there is a hint of like, lean into what you're feeling now and what excites you now instead of trying to force something that you're just not feeling.
Because I feel like
that's going to end up burning you out not only in that game, but it could burn you out in the hobby, which is a scarier thing for me, right? Yeah. If the hobby is consistent, the muse for me can be whatever species of duck I need it to be.
That's true. Honestly. I mean, that's everything for me, man. That's all the nerd shit that I've been doing while Amber's been away and been before that.
Yeah, dude.
I'm flowing right now.
Flowing too.
Everything is enjoyable right now for me in mini painting, and I'm just riding that wave.
Yeah. I think that's the most important thing, Goody Peepees, is just like, yeah, listen to your heart.
Listen to your heart.
That's a song, isn't it?
Your little baby heart. Oh, I mean, it's
listen
probably
to your heart.
Probably 17 songs.
And then calling for you.
Okay, that does sound familiar. You know what's weird? There's so many songs that are written about love.
Yeah,
it's
dude.
It's like 90% of songs.
Right.
That's insane.
What are the other 10%?
I made that.
What are the other 10% about?
Well, they're about Dave Mustaine complaining about the government.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Or alien invasion. One of those two things.
Yeah, Dave Mustaine, Ted Nugent, and Kid Rock got that 10% covered. Yeah.
There's probably some grindcore music. It's about some pretty raw shit.
I think it's just still love.
deep down.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, the things that drive you most are the things that are most passionate-based things. Love is one of those.
That's true.
Loss of love. You know,
we're the mini painting songs, bro. I have passion for that.
Dude, we could come up with our own Weird Al related. I don't want Weird Al. I want Flight of the Conchords.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we can be a Flight of the Conchords.
So it's going to be our original song. You're not riffing off an existing one.
Yeah, original song. Unless they were riffed off of Flight of the Conchords songs. They're about mini painting. Because it's a lot easier to write those songs.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot easier. You don't have to come up with a melody. You're right.
Yeah, ginger. Like, instead of it being Ginger Balls. It could be
ginger balls.
You remember
sugar
Murray?
Sugar lumps?
Murray.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Ginger balls is about Murray.
Is it? I guess so.
Him and you in the nude.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know that song. What was the name of the song? Is it Ginger Balls?
No, that's a different song.
Oh,
I just went into a different song.
Oh, okay.
If I have a... You're into.
That's an old one, right?
It is.
Yeah, I have a question for you that I just randomly thought of. What I get a vibe check on you. What do you? How do you feel when you play a war game with someone, and it's the day after the war game, and like they send you messages about rules you messed up in the game you played? How does it make you feel?
That has never happened.
That never happens.
That's never happened.
Oh my god, it happens to me all the fucking time.
I mean, maybe it has happened.
But
all those people are now dead.
It especially happens when, like, you lose the game and, like, or not when you lose the game, when the person loses the game and, like, they're trying to, like, find a thing. They're not trying to find it, but, like, there were, like, moments where it was, like,
oh, I would have won if.
I'm not sure about that ruling that we did here. I'm going to look up, like, the exact rules as written ruling. It's like, oh, we didn't do that right here. You know, that never happens to you?
Okay, maybe I frame it in my brain in a different way.
Okay.
Where we have conversations about things we screwed up. I think it's a better way to do that. It's
we
didn't do this right here. If we say we, then I think it's a much more helpful conversation in you both learning the game.
Yes,
oftentimes, like, I don't even know how my own shit works. Am I supposed to pay attention to you fucking up something in a rule book that I don't own? I'm going to spend $60 on your rule book to figure out your shit. And then that's the other part of, like, you know, going back to, like, the Age of Sigmar style games, it's like, I don't want to have to know how every army works intricately.
Yeah.
So I can check that you're not fucking me over because I'm never going to know.
Yeah, that's one of the costs of a game with a ton of individuality in an army is that there's a lot of rules to remember.
Well, that is just so many models, so many units, so many points on the table where it's like, yeah, you got your 7 dudes on the table. He's got his 6 dudes on the table. Like, it just feels more manageable.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh,
probably.
Is that how the rocket launcher works? Let me just check real quick. Like, you know, like, it seems more manageable. But anyway, yeah, dude, someone was, like, telling me that, like, oh, you screwed this up, and that was a big reason why I lost.
That's never that. It's
I would run them through.
Yeah. It's never you fucked up. That's why I lost. It's never like that.
Yeah. I mean, it is, but they're being nicer about it.
Yeah, maybe. That's kind of why it gives me a little bit of a negative vibe sometimes.
Yes, 100%.
But if it's for the good of getting the rules right. Then
correct.
Then it's important, I think.
I think that's very valuable. Yeah, it's like we're learning together.
Yeah. All right, should we wrap this thing up or not wrap it up but get into the after party?
Yeah, we're going over to the after party. They have Tropicana juice over there.
Mm-hmm. And Go-Gurts.
Dude, Go-gurts. Who needs spoons?
Yeah, dude, no. This is the future.
Dude, can you, like, shotgun a go-gurt?
Absolutely.
Can you, like, okay, so you snip the top of the go-gurt. I'm just trying to picture this. And then you tilt your head all the way back. You have the two fingers on the top.
Oh, my God, dude. Look at my two fingers, bro.
Yeah, dude. And then you just go, whoop,
right down the gullet.
What if you, yeah, there's a good chance you cough and just go,
yeah, dude,
over everybody. All right, let's do that.
Drop the bag all the way into your stomach. And so,
oh, yeah, you put it all the way down, and then you have to use your teeth.
Fucking deep throat and go-gurt.
You got to use your teeth on the end, like, cram it tight, and then pull it out.
You're fucking putting go-gurt like 8 inches deep right into your fucking, I don't even know what that would be, dude.
I just laughed so hard I farted. I don't know if you caught that on the audio, but
I mean, I did not. I didn't hear it in real life either. And he was like,
it was like mid laugh. I tried to cover it with the laugh. I don't think it worked, but
you worked.
Yeah, dude. All right, so
it worked. You didn't need to draw attention to a man.
Yeah, that was probably bad on me, my part. Yeah, deep throat and go-gurts coming to you in the next Tup Live. Let's get out of here.
You can't say that, because then someone's going to bring a fucking go-gurt for you to deep throat.
Yeah, and then I'll do it, and I'll fucking die.
John dies on an episode of Live Tup.
Whatever they do, I'll say that's I can't have that flavor of go-gurt. I'm allergic.
The fucking teeth. The teeth idea. I was like, how are you going to?
It's like a sword swallower.
How are you going to make it work? You're going to put your fingers right here. It's like, no, you use the teeth. And you
yeah. And then you don't even taste the go-gurt because it's down in your fucking stomach.
Well,
halfway down your esophagus.
Yeah, it's efficient.
I mean, it is. If you need to, you know, consume vast amounties of go-gurt.
Vast amounties.
Vast amounties of go-gurt. That is, I mean, all the go-gurt's talking right now. I don't even know.
It's all go-gurt right now.
Oh, God. Yeah. So, anyway, go-gurt's in the after party. So, if you want to join us in the after party,
DT some go-gurts. Give us $5.
Yeah. Join our Patreon. It's really, it's the only way we're allowed to be out of the house and record this podcast every other week is because of the wonderful patrons. And thank you, all of you, for supporting this deep throat and go-gurt themed podcast. that occasionally talks about ducks. Also spider porn. I feel like this episode is
true. It's sad but true.
You know, first time in a long time, I feel like we got some good billboard material. Like, we've been leaning on tendies and dew suckers and goody peepees for far too long. So what we need now is one of the goody peepees to come up with a sweet ass spider porn shirt. Tup spider porn shirt. Maybe don't put dongs on it, but you can,
like, blurt out spider parts.
Just pixelated.
Got a big old furry dong, dude.
Yeah. We're going to know at Tup Live who are the real goody peepees.
No, you can't give people this job. People are going to take your crazy ideas and make shirts out of them.
I mean, Goody Peepees Destroyer of Tenders, I believe, is probably the best miniature painting related merch that's ever been created. That shirt, I mean, I can't think of any shirt that's cooler than that shirt. And I'm not saying that because it's our shirt. I'm saying that because, like, every time I reach for that shirt in my closet, it makes me smile. It's fucking ridiculous. It's so good. It's so good.
And
so,
you can get that shirt in the link in our show notes and video description.
Yeah, you want to be a member of Goody Peepee Nation, you can destroy tendies yourself.
It'll make you smile whenever you see it in your closet.
Yeah, and then you can tell your graphic design inclined friends to make a spider porn shirt for us. And then maybe we can buy that one and support the podcast. See, we're going through all the supporting the podcast right now because they're not expecting it.
Yeah, oh yeah, we're tricking them.
Yeah, we're tricking them. So we're not going to do this at the end. We're going to say something else completely mind-blowingly innovative at the end of the podcast.
Wow.
But now we're going to go to the after party. Bye.
John, what is best in life?
The end of the podcast.
And that's it. We have no shilling to do.
We talked about our feelings. We talked about...
It was a long
after party. I have no... Yeah, it was a long after party.
That was over 30 minutes long.
We got talking about other weird stuff. We talked about garage sales.
We did estate sales.
We talked about a lot of things that had nothing to do with the after party.
Japanese furniture.
Yeah, dude.
Of course, ducks.
And more ducks.
Duck-themed Japanese furniture.
Yeah. You know, I was like, I had a point at one point, and I had a really great analogy for it, that for a topic earlier we were talking about in the episode with ducks. So, You know when you...
Wait, we all know. We've been here.
Okay, so... it was when we were talking about that point where someone feels bad when you're playing a game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there was... Back in the Kill Your Friends episode where we played Guild Ball, yes. I was flying high. I was doing so well. I started the game. I was like, yes, I'm playing so well. I'm in this giant, you know, bus in the sky 747 jet, right? And I was just like, not a care in the world. And then I look out the window, and a fucking duck flies directly into the jet engine. And that thing goes, poof, and just smoke starts hitting. Yep. And then I had to spend,
yep.
And I spend the rest of that game of Guild Ball as the plane slowly goes down. I know what the outcome of this fucking thing is, and I can't get off the plane. And I can't bring it out of the nosedive. The duck already ran into the jet engine. I'm fucked. I just got to be here.
That's how morts work, man.
It was like a slow strangulation by duck.
I know what you're trying to do with those two balls, okay? Mm-hmm. It's got to take that one ball. It's got to kick it away.
Yeah, dude, let me have my ball of light.
You don't get it.
Let me have my ball of light.
Guild Ball's coming back, baby.
Oh, dude, Lucas the Spider. That's the name of the cartoon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That's actually an oldie. That has been on for a while.
Hey, it's been on for a while.
Yeah.
I'm going to boop you out of nose.
Okay, so about Guild Ball briefly. They did well. Did you say Jesus Christ? Fuck you. Fuck you, bitch. I'll talk about Guild Ball as much as I want. They actually exceeded their sales expectations for releasing whatever they released, and now they are... They have employed a product manager for Guild Ball.
Okay.
It was an internal hire. It wasn't like a new person. It's someone who's been with the game for a while, but now someone is assigned that official role at the company.
Okay, good. Oh, good things.
That's
good
all
things.
I'll say. That's all I'll say.
Dude, it's not going to be as successful as Dirty Spike V-Ball, but it's going to be pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Fucking A, dude.
Yeah.
I need to finish that game. Dirty Spike V-Ball.
All right, goody BBs, this is it. We are wrapping up this episode. The next one will be the last one before the live episode at Adepticombo. We're gonna have another juicy episode, so you know, we're gonna talk more about spider porn, we're gonna talk more about mallards, and until then, we'll catch you on the
flippity flop.